Everybody, thanks for joining me tonight or today or wherever you are in the world. Just a quick update before I play the conversation that I recorded with Brian a few days ago. Some kind person recently hacked my email account, which has caused me quite a few issues. So if anybody needs to, so I've created a new email because it's caused me so many problems. So if anybody's been trying to get in touch with me or wants to get in touch with me, please get in touch with me now at, I'll give you the email address. It's letters to start with. It's IC, the letter I, the letter C, number 4, TS, so that's like the initials for ice cream for the soul. So IC4TS@hotmail.com. Thanks for that. So if, like I say, if anybody's trying to get in touch with me or wants to sign up for the newsletters, get in touch with me there, because like I say, I'm having real issues with the other email address that I would used to use. Also, next week's guest is going to be Paul Morgan Summers. You'll hear me mention the Soul Trekking event that recently happened here in Spain, and there's going to be another one in September, and my special guest on that trek is going to be Paul. Paul's a very interesting Welshman, and well, if you want to find out more about Paul, you can listen to the conversation with him next week. Okay then, thanks a lot. I'll play the recording with Brian. Hi everybody, it's Mark Jones here again with the Ice Cream for the Soul Blog Talk Radio Show, and it seems like it's been weeks and weeks and weeks since I've actually had a conversation. I'm always complaining about being busy, but I've been busy in a good way. There's been quite a few Three Principles events been going on over here in Spain. We've had Dr. Jack Fransky out here. I've been involved with quite a few events, and one of them being my own event where we went trekking with Jack. We had a group of 15 of us all together, and we went trekking in the Spanish mountains, and it went great. I think we've lost one or two of the hikers. They're still probably out there on the mountain somewhere, but luckily I got them to sign disclaimer forms, so everything's cool. But anyway, my guest this week is Brian Johnson. Brian's based in the USA in Phoenix, Arizona, and I've just spoke with him briefly before I started the recording, and I think people who listen to the Ice Cream for the Soul show know how I tend to do things. I just go very intuitively on who I want to speak with, and I've noticed Brian on Facebook, noticed a few of his comments, and I was just impacted by him, his Facebook posts, and just an idea I had about his history in many ways. So without further ado, I'll bring Brian on. Hi, Brian. Welcome.
Hi, Mark. Thank you for having me on the show here today.
No, that's great. It's great to finally speak with you, because we've been trying to arrange this for, it seems to be like about a month now, and we kept coming up against obstacles. Either I was busy or you was busy. So it's great to finally speak with you.
Yeah.
So, Brian's a maths teacher, like I said, based in the States. And, well, I was just wondering, we had a quick minute or two talking before we came on the air, Brian, and you told me about how you came across the principles at Gulf Breeze Recovery Center. Would you mind just sharing with people your story and how you've come to this point now, chatting with me? Just what took you to Gulf Breeze Recovery?
Right. Well, actually, I need to mention something else, too. Actually, I knew about the principles, the three principles, from a long time ago, from back when I was about 17. I saw Sidney Banks speak, and Joe Bailey was my counselor in Minneapolis. And at the time, I was 17 and in high school when I saw Sid speak, and that was in the late 80s. And really, I sort of listened from my intellect, you know, like if they'll talk about, you know, if you listen to, you know, some of the good three principles practitioners and psychologists and doctors and whatnot, coaches, you know, they'll talk about listening for a feeling. And I think that it's really the most important thing, because I really listened from an intellectual understanding. And I was just reading Sid's book, The Enlightened Gardener Revisited, and he was saying, you know, his pet parrot in there, or something about a pet parrot being able to recite what the three principles are, you know. And you know, really, really, or Sid would say in a talk, like a five-year-old could recite what the three principles are. It's not difficult, but it's more of a, you know, a spiritual understanding. And it came to more of a realization of that last summer while at Gulf Breeze. I kind of dismissed the three principles after a while of trying to figure it out on my own and kind of coming up empty. And so, you know, I went through my life, went through college and that sort of thing, and developed, you know, various mental health and addiction problems with alcohol and I guess you would say sex addiction. You know, if it wasn't that, it was golf, or it was, you know, if I wasn't drinking or using, you know, I had bouts of sobriety with, you know, where I was in 12-step groups and doing the AA thing, which, you know, isn't all that bad, but it just didn't do the trick for me. And so kind of briefly what led up to going to the Gulf Breeze was that I had, you know, was just having troubles in my marriage, you know, two kids, trying to work, trying to do everything, and was sober for a while, and then I relapsed for about a couple of months and moved out of the house so I could party a little bit harder. And then I just, my father, Jeff, who had been seeing Joe Bailey about a little over a year and a half ago, Joe told him about Gulf Breeze, and he said, oh, grab a brochure or something like that. Mm. And so my father told me about it like about a year ago to this, you know, till right around now, a year ago spring. And, you know, I thought about it. I said, man, that would have been the thing to do, you know, because I went through a traditional 12-step recovery inpatient about 8 years ago to a, you know, at the time was a world-famous treatment center, Hazelden, you know, like Eric Clapton went there, and, you know, he went there twice. And a lot of times people with addictions and alcohol problems, we have to go through things once or more, you know, sometimes a few times to really get it through to us. I think we're kind of thick-headed. That's kind of part of the thing there. But you know, some people can go away on a 2-day retreat and understand the three principles or have a changed life, you know. But like I say, alcoholics and addicts, we need to go away for, you know, 2 months, and then if we're lucky, we get something out of it. So anyways, I went to Gulf Breeze, and I won't bore you with the gory details before that, but it wasn't pretty. And when I got there, my wife was gonna divorce me. Send me the divorce papers while I got there. And for the first week, I was kind of like numb, and I was kind of like, okay, well, if that's the way it's going to go, that's the way it's going to go. And you know, sort of a somber kind of attitude towards it. I just figured we had no hope. And, you know, after the second week, you know, I kind of sobered up, and they started getting, you know, coming up with a plan for me, and I was on 7 different psychiatric medications and drinking alcohol when I came there. And so they were like, well, you know, we might be able to get you off of get you down to 3 medications, you know, and get you off the alcohol. So I was like, well, that sounds like a lot of progress, and I haven't had much progress in the past, you know, several years. So it sounded good to me. And, you know, I felt comfortable there because of those three principles, and something was kind of drawing me there, you know. I kind of felt like one of those characters in a Sid Banks novel where he gets drawn over to the banyan tree in Second Chance or something like that, or whatever one of those stories was, you know. I called my counselor in Phoenix before I went and said, you know, I think my heart's really into doing this, and I think this is where I need to be. So that's what I did. I didn't really have any money. I put the most of it on a credit card, and after about 2 weeks, you know, I was doing this sauna thing and kind of sobering up and talking with my counselor and going to the classes, and I started kind of dawning on me that there was something about being in the present moment that was important. You know, you got these guys like Eckhart Tolle writing books about the power of the now. I didn't read that book, but I've sort of come to understand that, you know, that concept through three principles. And so I just sort of kind of after a couple of weeks, you know, some people started saying they noticed some changes in me. They said, oh, you know, you look like you already changed a little bit. Like, you know, I can see it in your face and you're a little bit more relaxed. And, you know, I was kind of feeling at home and just kind of feeling a little bit more present. And, you know, I convinced my wife to postpone the divorce until after I got out of treatment. And so I bought myself a little time. And then I was reading some of the books. I read some Jack Pransky and some Joel Bailey and Sidney Banks. And then I had found a neat book at the airport, too, on the way there that was called Proof of Heaven, about a near-death experience from a neurologist in the States who had a week-long coma incident. And really, you know, that's, you know, I think... there's a lot of similarities there with some of these near-death experiences, and if you've heard about what happened with Sidney Banks and his enlightening experiences, you know, with the light, you know, with so there's an energy around us or within us and around us that's there, and you know, Sidney really, had a really deep, profound experience with that, and so have people with the near-death experiences. And so I was reading about that and reading these other books, and then all of a sudden, about a month into it, one of the counselors put on a video of a guy named Panache Desai. I think he's actually... was from the London or somewhere in the UK. And he was on Oprah Winfrey's Super Soul Sunday. And I just remember that day just being really present, just kind of in the zone, you know, in my element. And it was late morning, you know, just before lunch, and she put on this video. And, you know, Panache Desai, you know, it wasn't so much the way... what he talked about, it was the way that he spoke about it and the feeling that was coming across him. And like he was in, you know, he had tears coming down his cheeks and Oprah was crying. And, you know, he was, you know, I vaguely remember him talking about, you know, this idea of not being broken and that we don't need to be fixed. And, you know, that kind of hit me between the eyes or in the heart or whatever you want to call it. And then he started talking about, you know, God, and Oprah was asking him what his concept of God was. And he said, well, you know, what I can remember of it is he said something like, you know, you can't really describe God, you know, there's really no word to describe God, but, you know, the notion that God loves us all no matter what and loves us unconditionally. And that hit me square in the heart too, you know, in the soul. And I just felt it like that was my kind of big aha moment, was that that's true. You know, what he's saying is true. Like, like God does love me no matter what. And I had a lot of guilt and shame, you know, and I think a lot of people do. And, you know, maybe more so alcoholics and addicts because of the things we do when we're drunk or high or in our addiction or whatever, you know. But people in general deal with that, you know. And so I had to carry that around, you know, for a long time. And I just felt it sort of wash away, you know, and this feeling of love kind of coming up within me. And, you know, tears are coming down my cheeks and I'm really just, I'm like, yeah, that's the real deal there, you know, that's something. And and then I called my wife, you know, like after that, and we talked for maybe a half an hour and just talked about God and love. And she had done a trip to Spain before I left, or before I even... When I was relapsing, actually, she was in Spain doing the Camino Santiago, and she did part of it, you know, maybe like a week of it and a week of other travels. And she came to the conclusion that, you know, God always walks with us down our path, you know. And then when she came back, I was like, well, I'm leaving. And anyways, you know, so she... So I'm kind of bouncing around a little bit here, but she, you know, she would talk to me about God and where I was at in my spirituality throughout our relationship, and I would say, oh yeah, you know, God, Sid said God is a formless energy, and I could recite these things, or I would say, you know, all religions have the answer, you know, because it was something I heard from a Sid Banks tape, you know. So you can even intellectualize the principles and memorize it, and it doesn't do any good. So I felt it for the first time, and then from then on out, you know, I had a feeling to identify with, you know, and I was like, oh, this is the feeling they're talking about. Now I got something here, you know. This is a bit of a breakthrough here, you know, maybe even a major breakthrough, you know. And so I call my wife and we talk for half an hour, and I'm still crying and I'm still feeling elated and love. And you know, that was the beginning of the turnaround of my life and my relationship. And then the very next day, I'm in my counselor's office and I'm on this Zoom phone call, you know, kind of like Skype, you know, Supermind uses Zoom. And we talk about... you know, like my counselor just said, you know, just speak from the heart, you know, kind of thing. And she gave me Joe Bailey's book to read, Slowing Down to the Speed of Love, and reading the chapter on communication and, you know, speaking from the heart sort of a thing. And, you know, I just read that, you know, for about an hour before our session. And then I guess that's what I did because it worked, you know. And, you know, I said things to my wife that I never thought of, I never read, I never really even knew I felt that deeply in love with her, but I guess I had never felt true love until the day before, you know, because I didn't know what the, you know, love was. And, yeah, I probably did when I was a kid, you know, like growing up, you know, you're a kid, you're just enjoying life, and then, you know, adults teach us to be like them, and we learn to have cluttered minds, and, you know, it's no fault of theirs, you know, we're all doing the best we can. But, you know, I think, you know, that just touched me, and so I just shared with her, and I just was, like, completely vulnerable, and just laid it out all on the line, how I felt about her, and really, up until that day, I didn't know that I loved her that much, you know, and I don't know how that's possible. Like, how could you not know you love somebody that much? And you know, like Sid would say in some of his lectures, like, every couple is sitting in the perfect marriage, only their thoughts are in the way of them seeing that. And that's what I began to see in my own life. And like right then and there, I knew, like, someday, I was like, we're gonna renew our vows someday. You know, like, this is gonna work, you know, there's something between us now, And I told my counselor at the end of that session, she was like, "Do you need a break? That was pretty emotional." And I was like, "No, I feel great. I feel elated." I was like, "This is the best day of my life." I was like, I've never communicated with anybody at that level, you know, like, you know, down to the core, down to the soul, you know. And so, so then, you know, I had a month left because it was a 2-month program, and I thought, wow, well, if this happened in the first month, who knows what's going to happen the second month, you know. So I had a little bit more optimistic outlook, you know. And then, you know, I just continued doing the best that I could and, you know, showing up. And really from that day forward, I was even talking different. Like I just, things would come out of my mouth like I didn't know, like, who said that kind of thing, you know. Like, So it was great, and you know, I was in treatment. It wasn't that great, you know. I mean, you're in a building. There's only so much you can do, and there's so many people to interact with. But I made the best out of it that I could, and just continued talking with my wife. And you know, that was the day, you know, hope sprung alive in our relationship, and we really moved forward from that day. And you know, we're planning on renewing our vows on that day, which is August 5th. So it was August 5th, 2014 that we had that talk, and we're planning on renewing our vows this summer, August 5th, and having our kids be there. And it's a really special occasion for us, you know, because we were going through marriage counseling before. And, you know, the thing was, is, you know, they're telling you to read one book for your marriage, one book for parenting. I had the the AA book for my alcohol problem. I had, you know, this book, you know, I was told I was bipolar, ADD, and agoraphobic by this Dr. Amen, who's pretty famous in the U.S. for coming up with a more precise way to capture somebody's mood and then diagnose them. So, which is all he's doing. He's just capturing a mood through a SPECT image, which is like a photograph of your brain, which is interesting, but maybe I was in a bad mood the day he caught me. I don't know. And then with each one of those diagnoses, you know, there's a different treatment and modality for that. So I was like, I can't do it all, you know, I might as well drink again. And so that's what led me to relapse, you know. I was kind of like this screw it kind of attitude, you know. And so, you know, so I found hope at Gulf Breeze, and that just brought me alive. And, you know, it's really been beautiful since then. I came back the beginning of September, and my wife and I went for this long, beautiful hike. She decided she would postpone the divorce for a month, for 4 weeks, just to see what the new Brian's like, you know, see what Brian was like. And
can
she
I,
did.
Can I,
yeah.
Sorry, Brian. Carry on. Carry on. Sorry.
Okay. So she. So we just spent a lot of time together as friends, you know, and just reestablished this friendship. And you know, one of the books that really changed my life at Gulf Breeze was The Enlightened Gardener. And I remember like maybe three passages that just hit home with me. And one of them was something about in relationships, about just being friends and having your partner or your wife or your spouse or whoever is that significant other be your best friend. And you know, we just established that, you know, when I got back, because I think we were already really good friends, you know. And that's what she said was the hardest part, was when she was going to get the divorces, feeling like she was losing her best friend. Well, she got her best friend back and more, you know, and I did too. And we just spent a lot of time together and just talked and, you know, spoke from the heart. And, you know, we would like say, you know, it's so much easier this way, you know, than fighting it, you know, and trying to figure it out and trying to read this book and that book. And, you know, my wife was a little bit open to the three principles. She went to some of the weekly online groups that they did, and read some of the literature, Jack Prantsky and Joe Bailey books, and she was open to it, and God bless her for that. And we just worked from there, and it was like after a few weeks together, she just decided to post, the heck with the divorce. And after about 6 weeks, I moved back in with her. I had to live in a sober house for a while. These sober houses where people who are recovering from problems go live for a while. And so, I moved back home, and my kids were happy, I was happy, she was happy. It was like a brand new relationship, and it was like being on a honeymoon, for an extended period of time. And I don't even think our honeymoon was as good as it was in the fall, and it still is to this day. We're still talking about it. Like, I am not, I used to be so selfish, just like I used to think that, if I wanted happiness, I had to do selfish things like, go to a strip club, drink alcohol, play golf, get a massage, go to a nice restaurant, I had a criteria of things that had to happen, and I just was, didn't realize I was putting all those things in front of my happiness, and then just these little things would happen, like my 7-year-old daughter just one day out of the blue says, I like the new dad. And, stuff like that would just bring tears to me, and it would just start me crying, because I knew I had changed, and I knew my wife knew I had changed, and a lot of people saw it around me. But when I didn't even tell my daughter that, and my wife didn't tell her that, and my daughter just picked up on it, and I had like one particular instance, and I wrote about a lot of these things on Facebook. I don't know why. And look back now and I go, God, what was I thinking? But it's actually kind of cool because I have like a history of it now that's on there and people's comments to it. And I felt more inspired to do it than anything, it was just so amazing to me. Like I remember this one time with my daughter, her just being at this fundraiser thing for school, and she's running these little laps to raise money for the school. And every lap she gets like however many dollars somebody pledged to raise money for the school. And every lap she came over and gave me a hug, and she was like, I'm just so happy to see you today, Dad. And it was like, I felt like our souls actually connect. And like, I had never experienced, I think I experienced that with my wife with that, but then experiencing that with my daughter, like this just deep sense of connection to her. And we both like felt it, and we didn't know what, what that was, because this is all new, And there's not a lot of Three Principles people in Phoenix, there's, and I didn't really have anybody to say, okay, I kept in touch with Lisa Portinga, who's a Three Principles practitioner in St. Paul, Minnesota, and she was one of the aftercare people. So I would, every 2 weeks I would talk to her for about an hour or so, and I would tell her all these things that were happening, that was happening. And I still talk to her because, I just want to keep growing, and, I'd love to do, a lot of these things, like trekking through Spain or conferences in Europe. And
maybe I'll see you over here then on one of the treks sometime.
Yeah. But until then, I just sort of, have my Sid Banks CDs and his books, and I talk to my Three Principles practitioner, and, sometimes I listen to some of the other stuff on Supermind or the other online resources, the Three Principles movie site and YouTube. Now I'll have to check out your gig here since I'm on it. So
Well, there's so much stuff out there now, Brian. That's one of the wonderful things. That's, like I say, it doesn't matter where you are with the power of the internet now. There's so much stuff that's on the end of the internet. You know, just a few taps on the keyboard and you can get connected to all sorts of stuff. That's one of the great things about the positive sides to the internet, isn't it?
Right, right. That's one of the good benefits of it.
Yeah. Well, that was a very powerful, story, Brian. And like I said, it's obviously a radical change from going in to Gulf Breeze on the verge of divorce to coming out now saying like it feels like you're on a extended honeymoon in many ways. It's just an amazing turnaround.
And right.
Over the last few years, I've spoke to quite a few people who have similar stories and who also refer to those. You talked about the other modalities that seem to want to box every little issue up and label it, and it just seems to make things so much more complicated, doesn't it, when compared to the Three Principles understanding. And I was really impacted and understand what you said at the beginning about when you first heard Sid and you was kind of listening to him from the intellect, because that's very much how I was. Not necessarily with the principles, but I was reading philosophical material, and I wasn't getting it because I was trying to figure it out with my intellect and then I came across the principles and was impacted in a similar way to it sounded like you were. And another thing that I was really touched by you was, like you say, your daughter hadn't even been talked to about what had been going on, but she picked up on the fact that your personality or how you were had just completely turned around. Was it just like a gradual shift for you, it sounds like, while you was in Gulf Breeze, you just suddenly started recognizing aspects of yourself that you hadn't seen before?
Yeah, it just sort of kind of dawned on me in the beginning about, being in the present moment, and I just remember that was kind of my first kind of subtle insight, was that being in the present moment is like the complete package, it's the full meal deal, it's the, everything you need is in the moment, and then I think that huge kind of insight for me about that, that I was loved no matter what by a power greater than myself allowed me to really feel that love for myself, that I had lacked for so many years, because there were a lot of times when I was sober or not sober that I just didn't want to live, I didn't want to wake up. I didn't really want to hurt myself, but I just didn't want to live, just didn't like who I was. And now, majority of the time I like who I am, and when I'm not feeling that, I know something's off, because now I have a new bar, that's set a little higher, that I should feel good, that's the new normal and then every so often, I get these bouts of gratitude that just sort of overwhelm me, and I just sometimes I just am crying so hard that I'm sobbing with gratitude towards my life and loving, just love everything about my life. And to me, Sid and I'm sure other people talk about this, is gratitude is a wonderful feeling, you know, and it's sort of a way to go to, you know, bring us to higher levels is through gratitude. Because if I try to say, oh, well, you know, I've come this far and I want to go deeper and I try to, you know, think my way into it, it just never works, you know. But I love the way the principles work, that you, the more you feel gratitude towards life and beautiful feelings, and the longer you stay in that feeling, you know, the more your consciousness raises, you know. And that's such a fun way to do it, as opposed to, you know, trying to work at it the slow way, you know, read this book on this topic and that book on that topic, you know. And
yeah, the steps. Yeah, the steps and techniques, yeah.
Techniques, yeah.
Yeah. Can I just pick up? I've been really impacted by what you're saying, especially. Well, this is probably one of the reasons why we're having the conversation, because, like I say, I noticed one or two of your Facebook posts, and within you've said a few things a couple of times, but in the last minute or two, you mentioned quite a few things that I've been impacted by. You talked about the simplicity of being in the now, the loving yourself, gratitude, the importance of the feelings, and I can resonate with you on the bit. And to a lot of people, when initially somebody might say, "Oh, you need to be thankful for things in life." If people are in a, excuse my French, in a shitty situation, straight away they can just dismiss that, because they can say, oh, how can I be grateful that my wife's about to leave me, I've lost my job, I'm a raving alcoholic or whatever.
Yeah.
And but even the person in the direst circumstances can find something to be grateful for, can't they? And I think that just begins to help them see some kind of light at the end. I was going to say light at the end of the tunnel, but it's in many ways it's a light that's within us.
Yeah.
That we fail to recognize, because we're quite often so in the intellect. And I was really, in many ways, feeling that when you was talking.
Yeah.
And
I don't know, you can't really talk about everybody's specific circumstance, you know. All I can do is speak about my circumstance, and I had the same life a year ago, and I hated it, and I really do. I lost my job, but then I got it back, because I told my boss my story, and she hired me back, you know, and then I lost my relationship, essentially, and I got it back, you know, and now I have everything the same, and I see, it's like, it's like somebody turning on that little spiritual light bulb, and all of a sudden you're seeing, oh, you know, there are blessings around me, you know, there are things to be, I never used that word before, like blessing, like, and now... Now it's part of my vocabulary, but sometimes that's just the way I feel, you know, like I do feel blessed, like and it's not a blessing like I have to sit down and write 20 things I'm grateful for and think about each one, you know. It's sort of like at times just kind of wells up in me, you know, like kind of out of the blue, you know, like, I guess if I'm not, you know, maybe it's like they say, if you're not holding it down, it sort of, you know, comes up naturally on its own, you know, but I, you know, I sure like it when I feel that way, and it's like really, cleanses my soul, you know, it's awesome.
And I think a lot of that as well, like Sid, like you said a few times, Sid talked about the simplicity, well, about coming into the now, as Eckhart Tolle famously wrote about as well.
Right.
And I think the more we can step out of our minds, our thinking minds, the more you do see the beauty around you, don't you? Like you say, your life is just the same as it was when you was going through all the problems, but now you're seeing it through different eyes. You're really appreciating what you've got, whereas most of us are labeling things, and we miss so much of life because we're just caught up in how we think things should be. Or it's just, I was struck last night. I went to my stepdaughter, Sheila's daughter, my partner's daughter, she's a ballet dancer. Uh-huh. And we went to the theater. She was she was dancing with her classmates. She was at university studying ballet. And there was a full orchestra. There was people singing, there was opera singers. And it was something that I would have probably found horrendous to go and watch maybe 10 years ago. And I was moved to tears while I was there. And it was another... I was just thought of that when you were speaking. It was just like, just really appreciate what's happening in front of you, that people are playing music from the heart, people were singing from the heart, people were dancing from the heart, and there's all that kind of stuff going on all around us all the time, and we miss it, don't we? Like our children playing, we go, oh yeah, there's a child playing, and we don't see the beauty of it. We don't see the beauty. Yeah. Well, I'm a gardener. I think I mentioned to you at the beginning before we came on air. And
you're the enlightened gardener.
Well, not quite. I don't know about that. I've been gardening on and off for over 30 years, and I've started to notice flowers, which sounds ridiculous. But sometimes I'll be in a garden, and the beauty of a flower will just stop me in my tracks. You know, I just stop and take it in. And I'm sure a lot of that since I've come across this understanding. Yeah.
Right. I mean, whether we choose to think life is simple or ordinary, you know, I guess we're always right, because, you know, whatever we put in, we get out, and, you know, it feels so much better to notice the special, simple, special things in life, you know, the little things that just kind of touch you when you allow it to touch you, you know, like it becomes precious that way. Otherwise, it's just an ordinary flower, you know, and you've seen one, you've seen 100, right? But the difference is so, it seems so subtle, but yet it's so profound, you know, like to go through your life noticing those little things, you know, is huge, really. I mean, that alone will take you out of a bad mood, an addictive thought, a bad, you know, marriage, you know, whatever it may be, so that, you know, you, like, I don't really worry about thinking about drinking anymore, you know, because you know, I used to think I had to do all these things to overcome my addiction and my alcoholism and all these things, you know. And really, when you're living moment to moment, and you're living the good life, you know, noticing those little precious things, it doesn't occur to you to do something that's self-destructive, you know, like drink or do drugs or whatever it may be, you know, like, I don't want to mess my life up now, because, you know, for the most part, I realize I've got a good life now, you know. I mean, I wouldn't say my life's perfect and everything's, you know, great, but at the same time, when I see the beauty in it, I know that I've got it good, you know, like there's no great way to say it. It's just, I don't have to have a perfect life to see the perfection of life, you know.
Oh, that was beautiful. Yeah.
So, that's my cure for my, you know, mental health and addiction problems is that, you know, nice feeling inside. And, you know, even on my bad days, when, let's say, I've got bad headache, and let's say I was up late with the kids or in the middle of the night with my daughters for whatever reason, or just had trouble sleeping on my own, you know, and maybe some challenging thing comes up at work or whatever, or at home that's challenging, or, you know, life happens, you know, I still don't think about drinking. And if I, well, I shouldn't say I don't think about drinking. I don't have a craving to drink. Like, the thought might come into my head, which, you know, it's still going to at times, but it doesn't turn into that, like, I've got to have one kind of a feeling.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah.
Well, can I just explore that with you for a bit, Brian? Because I'm sure there'll be people listening to this who perhaps are listening to it from an interest of perhaps themselves having maybe addictive issues. Because I could relate to that to a certain degree as well, because although mine, well, in many ways it's not classed as a serious addiction, but many people die of, I used to smoke quite heavily. Like I say, it's not classed as a major addiction, but many people die from smoking related illnesses.
Sure.
And I can relate to the fact now that even now I've quit smoking over 11, 12 years ago.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's really strange that I'll just smell one and I think, I could just have a cigarette now. But
yeah.
I see it as just a thought. I don't take it seriously. I was wondering if you could talk to that with your perhaps alcohol related issues.
Right. Well, there's going to be those times when, you know, I see a beer commercial or something and I go, oh, you know, I want one of those. Does sound nice, you know, the thought of it. Yeah. And so it's kind of like clouds going through the sky, you know, if they just normally pass. But if you grab onto those clouds and you get enough of them gathered together, you know, it might make a storm, you know, if you had the power to gather clouds and put them together, you know, you might get a rainstorm, you know, and then you're dealing with a craving. And, you know, you can even still get out of a craving, you know, you just let it pass, you know, even if it turns into a craving. It's sort of like it's kind of like a panic attack in a way. I don't know that I've really had a panic attack, but it's kind of, Bill Pettit would talk about like a panic attack going away in 2 or 3 minutes if you just let it pass. So like if you get a craving, you know, and you know, it feels like, you know, you really need to have that, you know, if you just sit with it, let it pass, don't try to get yourself out of it. The more you try to get out of it, the more you spin your wheels, the harder it gets to get out of a, it's like getting caught getting your car caught in a ditch, you know, that's wet and slippery. The harder you spin your wheels, the faster it goes, the harder it is to get out if you just sort of ease up on it and rock the car a little bit in reverse and then rock it forward, then you get out of it, you know. It's sort of like if you let up on all that thinking, you know, it'll pass and the sky will clear up and you'll get your sunshine again, and that sunshine is your innate health, you know, that's always it's always there. And even if you're caught in a low mood and you get some of that thinking, you know, if you just do something to take care of yourself, you know, if you can, you know, sometimes I'll, get some exercise or take a hot bath or read a book or, get on Facebook and chat with somebody or, you know, something to kind of divert my mind from whatever it's thinking about, you know, because sometimes, a little diversion sort of, you know, if I sit in a room with the lights out and try not to think about a thought, you know, it's going to be hard, you know.
Yeah.
Don't think about that pink elephant that's walking across the screen, you know,
or
whatever. It's kind of like, seems too compelling. But if, you know, you just sort of, You know, if you just sort of listen to your intuition, you'll kind of know what to do to get out of it, you know. And that has worked for me, and that's been working for me for 10 months now, and it works a lot better for me than AA. And I'm not here to say AA is bad or anything like that. I'm just saying for me this works a lot better in my life, and it works with every facet of my life, not just my addiction to alcohol.
I think that's the interesting thing about this. What everybody seems to say, you may, like you said, somebody may come across the principles because of an addiction issue,
yeah.
But then they suddenly realize it, like you say, it helps across the board with the relationships and everything.
Right.
And I really liked what you said about when we were talking about rewinding a little.
Uh-huh.
When you was talking about suddenly, say, a beer commercial came on the TV and then
yeah.
You're like, oh, I could go for a beer right now.
Yeah.
And then you talked about the power of gathering clouds. And in many ways, it's like hooking you, getting entangled in the thinking about, I want a beer, whatever it may be.
Right.
And to many people, I think this is why sometimes the principles aren't picked up on initially, because it sounds too simplistic, and we're all generally told about steps and things to do, and we're just talking to people about just noticing the thoughts and then
yeah.
staying as in your innate health, or
yeah.
which would be the sky in your metaphor.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering, would you like to talk, or could you talk a little about what innate health means to you then, Brian?
Well, I think to me what it means is like if you look at children, babies, they come out and they're full of pure joy and pure love and pure understanding, and throughout kind of that's our innate health, right there. And that throughout time, we're kind of taught to get away from that and taught to have this great thing called an ego and to boost up our ego. And our ego is really what sort of gets in the way from us seeing that innate health. And so that's sort of why people meditate, is to sort of quiet the ego down enough to see that innate health again that's always there. It can't really go anywhere. You can't do anything to get rid of it. You can only cover it up temporarily. And some people, some people cover it up for a long time, And that's really it. I mean, It's really just keeping it simple, because the more we there's really no reason to complicate that.
And people have to see it for themselves, don't they? I think I think that's probably in many ways why sometimes people perhaps sometimes don't actually are impacted this straight away. It's because we're so used to people telling us or informing us something. Yeah. And this is, it's almost like rolled in a mirror up to people and saying, look, and people, quite often people go, what? But
yeah.
I was thinking about innate health as like, it helped me with you talking about the clouds in the sky. It's like when it rains, the sky's not affected, is it? If there's an explosion, the sky doesn't blow up, or it's not burned by fire. And in many ways, many of us are just so caught up in our thinking mind and the intellect, we don't even stop to even consider whether there is such thing as innate health. And it's not until quite often we see it by accident, which it seems like you did at Gulf Breeze Recovery, perhaps, and now many of the people who come across these principles, they suddenly see it. And once you've seen it, you can't deny you've seen it, can you?
No, you know, I have gone through little bouts where I go, oh, that really wasn't that special. That's pretty normal, you know. That's just
yeah.
and then I get, nah, that's not. It was, you know, and it doesn't. It's special to me, you know, and that's what counts, is that I see it and that it's special to me. And sure, I can't deny, you know, what it's done in my marriage and what it's done in my, you know, parenting and, you know, the people around me that have noticed the change in me. It's undeniable. And, you know, but, you know, it's, I think it's quite natural to get some kind of doubts and sort of question it from time to time, you know, probably when we get in a low mood or take our thoughts too seriously, and, you know, but it's, I can't, you know, when I feel awesome inside, you know, there's no denying that, you know. A year ago I didn't know that existed. I really didn't. Or maybe even better said, I forgot that it existed. That's what happened. I forgot for 30 years.
Yeah.
Just for 30 years.
Yeah. Well, I think you said something else early on in the conversation as well about, as a child, you were connected with your, you probably wouldn't have labeled it like this at the time, but you were talking about love, and you said you only really felt it as a child. But then, like most of us, we get, as we come into adulthood, we start boxing life up. We think we've got it all worked out, haven't we? And everything can be labeled and boxed up. And that's when we limit ourselves so much, don't we?
Right. Mm. Yeah, it's kind of like, we're only worthy of love in certain situations, or if certain things happen, or we place limits on it and conditions. Yeah, conditions, that's the word I'm thinking of. Like, it's kind of, something has to be met for us to experience that, you know?
Yeah, and even to give it as well, sometimes that's how
we're right. To give it.
Well, Brian, I'm so pleased I give you a nudge and asked you to come and have a chat with me. And like I say, it's a while since I've had a chat. It's been a great jumping back into it in many ways. I really enjoyed listening to your story. I've really enjoyed speaking with you. And I'm sure, like I say, I've had a few conversations now with people who've had addiction issues. I've always had some good feedback from them. And people really do find them helpful, because there's so many people these days do seem to look to the outside to some kind of substance or whatever it may be to try and help them get through life better, mm-hmm. and in an easier way. But I think you said something, and I wrote it down. You said, you don't have to have a perfect life to see the perfection of life.
Right.
And I think when people just start to get a glimpse of that, it can help them start letting go of those things that they grab onto to try and help them get through better. Does right. it, can't they?
Yeah.
Mm.
Absolutely.
Mm. Well, Brian, would you be open to anybody getting in touch with you, perhaps if they've had any addiction issues, or would you?
Sure.
Are you open to connecting with people?
Yeah, I am. I guess a good way to find me is just on Facebook, Brian Johnson. Brian is spelled with a Y, B-R-Y-A-N. Is that sufficient, do you think? Or?
Yeah, that's fine. Like you say, if you want to give your email out, that's fine. If you just rather people connect with you on Facebook, that's fine too.
Or I could give a email address is fine too. It's Brian, B-R-Y-A-N, the letter J, then the letters PHX@gmail.com.
Great. Thanks very much. And like I say, I really appreciate your time, Brian. And would you just stay on the air after I've finished the recording? As always,
sure.
I forget to say that before we come on the air. So thanks again, Brian. And I just want to say thanks to everybody for tuning in or listening to the recording. And I think I mentioned at the beginning when I was talking to Brian, when I first brought him on, about the trekking I did out here with Jack Pransky, and there's more of those kind of events coming up here in Spain. So if anybody's interested in that, just give me a shout. And also in November, we've got a big three principles gathering happening here in Spain called the Viva event. So if anybody's interested in that, give me a shout. There's more details. There's a Facebook page up on regarding that as well. So I'm not sure who my guest will be next week, but I'm sure it'll be somebody interesting, as always. So thanks, wherever you are in the world, thanks for listening. Bye, everybody. Bye, Brian. Thank you.
Bye. Thank you very much for having me on.